Hey everybody, welcome to Diana Prince Secret Agent. Terry and I are looking at The Brave and the Bold, Volume 1, Issue Number 87. And by the way, I am one of your hosts, Ed.
I'm your other, Terry Ann.
And tonight, we have a special guest with us because he is a huge fan of The Brave and the Bold and perhaps an even bigger fan of a little bit later iteration of The Brave and the Bold that we'll be talking about here in Wonder Woman's mod era, too. But with us, we have the Brave and the Bold aficionado, Billy D. How are you, Billy?
I am fantastic. Thank you guys for having me on. I appreciate it.
Not a problem, man. It's cool for us to be able to get another voice, you know, another set of eyes on these things. And I know that you're a big fan of The Brave and the Bold. And I thought, well, man, who better to have on and what better reason to have somebody on than to help us talk about this oddness that happens in Brave and the Bold every issue of that book. Not that Wonder Woman's not odd sometimes too, but The Brave and the Bold is a little bit odder, I think, on average.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with you. Yeah, like you, I used to be, you know, just Marvel, straight up, like Marvel Team Up, Marvel 201 were my team up books. But the more and more I've read The Brave and the Bold, I think it's, you know, maybe it's edged out those two as my favorite because, you know, mostly because of the creators involved later on.
And I've heard a lot of people say, too, that they've always been a fan of the team-up books. Brave and the Bold is one, and then Marvel has a couple. There's another big one in DC also. Because you get to see so many more characters. So it's kind of a more of a bang for your buck kind of deal.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And then, you know, it's sometimes for me, too, I like even more than that is it creates awkward situations between characters. And that does happen in this book here, for sure.
Boy, howdy it does. Yeah, sometimes it doesn't necessarily come to mind for Brave and the Bold, but for World's Finest, there are some team ups that you're like, why in the world are they even, you know, close to each other to team up? So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this one and World's Finest, you know, have a lot of Bob Haney, so that's where I mostly focus. I haven't read a whole lot of DC Comics Presents yet. I've read a couple, but not a lot. But yeah, there's always weirdness galore in World's Finest.
Yeah, yeah. All right. For those of you out there that don't have the benefit, as we have spoken before, Terry collects Wonder Woman. So we have the
actual books,
the real books here. And I also have the Wonder Woman Diana Prince Celebrating the 60s Omnibus, which has these additional appearances of the mod Wonder Woman mixed in along with Wonder Woman's actual title. So those are the two places that we're using here. Billy, what do you have?
So I think I might have DM'd you this. I have, they came out with paperback trades there for a while. DC was putting them out. And I have volume one and volume two in paperback of The Brave and the Bold from the Bronze Age here. And it's fantastic. They're great trades, but they stopped making them. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to buy. They came out with omnibus editions. And I bought all three. I think I bought one of them or maybe two of them brand new. And one of them like used, you know, hey, whatever. As long as it's in good shape and a decent price, I don't care if something's used. But
yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah, but somehow I lost volume one of the omnibus editions, and I'm not sure how you lose one of those because those are huge books. Somehow I did.
maybe you had a momentary kindness and gave it to somebody.
I don't know. It's totally possible something like that happened, but my memory's so bad I can't remember. So I just bought another one.
Okay. Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
So yep, the trades. That's where I'm reading it.
Okay. For those of you that are looking and don't have any of these that we've mentioned, there's a couple other places, apparently. The Showcase Presents Brave and the Bold Batman Team-Ups from 2007, issue number one. You'll find this issue of Brave and the Bold 87 reprinted. Apparently, Diana Prince Wonder Woman from 2008, issue number two. And then, like Billy said, there's the Brave and the Bold Bronze Age Omnibus. And then also they released them under the same title as separate trade paperbacks also. So, and this, I'm looking at the Grand Comics database. The Omnibus, which is typically a big hardcover, was released almost a year before the trade paperbacks. Does that sound right?
Wow. You know, that could be because whoever is the person in charge of collections at DC. They're, you know, they do some really weird stuff. They could be, I don't know if they're on the sauce or what, but they do some very bizarre things. So it's totally possible.
Yeah. I guess normally I'm thinking that you kind of build up, you know, you have the individual issues and then you have a smaller collection and then maybe a trade and then a hardcover and then the big omnibus, you know, kind of in that order, not in the reverse order, because I would think, well, heck, if people plop down the money for the omnibus, why would they buy the cheaper trade a year later?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the people who won't plop out the money.
Well,
for the omnibus.
I guess. Yeah.
That's, yeah. Yeah. I mean, the omnibus editions, I've been buying a lot of those simply because I'm trying to kind of play catch up with DC Comics, because I was a Marvel guy for like 20 years, just almost strictly Marvel. So I'm trying to play catch up, especially with my peers and with podcasting. So that was like the cheapest way to get a lot of comics, you know, in front of me. But they are a little unwieldy, you know, other than, you know, slapping them on a counter and looking at them. It's not like you're like, I think I'll drag my omnibus, you know, read a couple comics before I go to bed. Like,
right,
you're not
yeah,
doing
right.
that. So yeah. I would prefer trades, but they only came out with two. So that's why I had to go the other way.
Yeah, those omnibuses don't usually travel with us when we go on vacation to the beach or go hiking in the mountains or things like Mm-mm. that. Yeah, they
no,
they usually end up staying back at the house and we take some. Anymore, we just take a digital thing with a bunch of comics on it, and yeah, that's mm-hmm. what we use. Oh, those of us that go on vacation, we don't
know what that is.
Yeah, we don't know what that is. Word. So yeah, so.
I'm sorry to hear that.
We are too.
I try to go on as many as possible, just for my sanity.
Oh yeah, no doubt. Okay, let's see. Looks like we'll start at the cover, and this was done for us by Mike Sikowski and Dick Giordano on pencils and inks, and letters by Caspar Saladino. Colors, who knows, probably a short notice, we need to get this colored, pass it around the apartment kind of deal. It seems to have been, well, I say that. I'm more familiar with that happening with Marvel Comics, but I can only imagine it had to have been happening with DC stuff as well. Okay, so on the cover here, we have, I was mentioning to Terry right before we started recording, we have this image of Wonder Woman. You flipped through. Did you ever see?
I flipped through and I did not see her staked out on any piece of land.
Yeah, so I guess there was maybe a slight miscommunication with Sikowski and what editorial wanted, or maybe this is what they wanted, but then when... interestingly enough, though, I see that Sikowski did the story inside too. So I don't understand how there's going to be an image with the same writer artist on the cover than anything that happened in the book. Any thoughts?
Sometimes I think they did a bait and switch intentionally. I honestly do. I think they did that intentionally. Sometimes put something on the cover that was really shocking to get you to buy it, even though it didn't happen inside.
Okay.
I do.
So what we're seeing here, I guess, then is the image of the car that Batman's driving being wrecked, and it's going to fall and squish Diana Prince, I guess. So yeah, that in just the way I described it is a little bit more exciting than anything that happened in the book.
I don't know. I thought the book was pretty exciting.
Well, not this kind of,
not
exciting.
That kind of exciting, I mean, not death, peril.
Yeah, that's thing, you know. And then, so there you see that Batman has been apparently run off the road by this dude behind him.
Who's green?
Well, he's got a helmet, a mask on there. He's got a COVID protect. Even yes. back then.
I know.
Yeah. So, so yeah, there's some kind of race. You see it kind of occurring in the background. They're kind of coming around a corner, and the evil dude, and you know he's evil because he's all in black, right, Billy? That's the. That's,
and he's smirking.
That's the way they do it. He's all in black.
Yeah, oh, yeah. And usually bald. And there are telltale signs of evil. Bald, goatees, cigarette smoking. Usually, yeah, there's or a monocle.
Oh, ooh.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah, the guy's face shield kind of looks like, I would say it's Mountain Dew colored.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I could see Mountain Dew. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what it looks like to me. But yeah, like I said, interesting cover. I think it's a very action packed. It always makes me think, why is, you know, Batman driving a race car in a race? Not, you know, Bruce Wayne. Why is it Batman? That's kind of always like, see this cover, like what's going on here? So it catches my interest.
Sure. Yeah. Either you would think Batman in the Batmobile, or yeah, like you said, Bruce Wayne in something more regular than the Batmobile, but here they're kind of combining. And then, like I said, that you wonder, oh, and the title of the, yeah, I guess the title of the story they're telling you is Widowmaker, as you see the car about to squish Dinah Prince here on the cover, who's all staked out, kind of like a Gulliver Travels kind of woman or something like that. All right. So looking at the DC fandom wiki, we're told that Willy Van Dort, the son of the Nazi war criminal General Van Dort, plans to use unsportsmanlike means to win a race by having Bruce Wayne killed. Batman enters the race, and with the help of Diana Prince and, well, this says I Ching, but we all know that his name is just Ching. It's not I Ching. Wins the race instead of Van Dort, who was willing to win by any means, even murdering Batman. After Batman wins the race with Diana's help, Van Dort and his accomplices are arrested. Wonder Woman also gets into some trouble with the law when it turns out the car she thought was a rental was the wrong one and was reported stolen. Now, it's interesting that they throw that in. That's a third of the synopsis, but I thought that it was more like just a gag thrown in at the very end of the story.
Yes, me too.
Yeah. So
wasn't important.
So, okay. I don't know. We'll just flip open here to the first page. The first full page here, Billy, anything stand out to you?
Yes, the panel in the bottom right-hand corner. I don't know what it looks like. I'd love to hear what Terry has to say, how it's colored in the original comic, but I like that bottom right-hand panel. That's it's a close-up of Diana, and there's like, her face is kind of like partially like a green color like throughout the panel there. That catches my eye.
It's very much looks a lot the same in the omnibus that Ed has. It's a little more saturated in the omnibus, right, of course. But I was assuming it was, just like you all corrected me on his shield, I was assuming it was the windshield, and perhaps it was just the sun glaring across it because she's driving.
In the previous panel, they didn't do anything.
But it's not a close-up.
Okay.
This is a close-up. But yeah, there are green stripe variations on her face.
Yeah, it's kind of a, Billy, in the original, it's kind of a light lime greenish kind of color with more the off stripes being more flesh tone on her face, you know, what you would expect her face to appear like. In the omnibus, actually, it is very close, just a little more saturated, mm-hmm. but not the oversaturation like I've complained about other books being.
Well, if you look at the red in the car above her head,
it's very
red in the omnibus, and it is a very washed out kind of looking red in the comic.
Almost a reddish orange in the original, but definitely a red here in the omnibus
that I'm using. In the omnibus.
What jumped out at me was how Speed Racer her car looks in the mm-hmm. previous panel there.
Mm-hmm.
I like the eyes and the mouth. It's very, very animated. It's an animated car.
Yeah, you in the panel before that, which is the main panel on the page, you see some of the cars, and they, I think, are typical late 60s, early 70s kind of open wheel or indie style cars. But her car is this futuristic. You would almost expect that to be in a S.H.I.E.L.D. book from Marvel flying through the sky. It looks so aerodynamic.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Next up, we have a two-page spread, and probably the biggest thing to me is the girl on the second page who's blue.
I don't know. That woman in that polka dot green and black dress is pushing it for me too.
Well, yeah, the dress is kind of shall we say kite-ish. Looks like she's just wearing a kite. But yeah, the other woman, her face and neck and her arms and hands are blue, but below from the thighs down are normal flesh tone. So I'm like, now she is wearing a big blue boa.
Maybe it's a veil.
So I don't know. Yeah, I saw that in the because I read the original issues first and then just pulled out the omnibus here tonight to record.
And she's blue everywhere.
And yeah, looking at it, it's like, yeah, no, she's blue in this too. So they didn't correct anything. So I'm not sure what the point of that is.
Yeah, that's bizarre. Yeah, very bizarre. There's a woman behind her, though, that almost looks like Diana with a driver. And she's got an interesting outfit on, too. I like it, though. It's cool.
It's very 60s.
Yeah, that looks more like a normal. Yeah, like she must be with everybody else here in the garage. She's not part of whatever entertainment thing this is that's going on here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And,
They're having a fashion show. That's what it is.
I get it's
that's
some,
what she says. They're having a fashion
it's
show.
It's some 60s thing. They combine is it hot couture with racing. hot cars. Hot couture and hot cars.
Yeah,
there
you go.
There we go. You know, somebody like Charlton should come out at this time with a book like that or something. Hot cars.
And
haute couture. Yeah, well, okay. I think hot rods. Wasn't it in the 60s that Charlton had hot rods out, Billy?
They did, yeah. They had a comic about that, yep.
Hot rod racing or so. They had like two or three because I remember reading that somebody tried something at Charleston that had cars and it did really well. And the people who actually might have been Dick Giordano later on, was he at Charlton?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he got started there before he ever worked for DC. Yep.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But they saw that something worked and they're like, oh, we need 5 books about that. And so all of a sudden these the hot rod books just kind of exploded at Charlton after a couple months.
Yeah. And then these 4 creepy guys, man, it's like, oh, boy, poor Diana.
Yeah. Yep. They're grouped together. They're all wearing black or dark. Anyways, they're kind of a bluish, I guess, jumpsuits. But the jumpsuits are the same color as the car. The car, which is named Widow Mocker, which I was like,
it's German
somebody,
spelling.
Somebody misspelled that.
No, it's right. German spelling.
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm.
I don't think that Mocker is German for maker, though. I don't think that matches up. Widowmaker, Widowmocker, and I, yeah. Anyways, but yeah, that's the title off the cover too, is Widowmocker. So,
well, the German translation to English is doer. So maker, mocker.
Oh, okay.
Maker, doer. That's pretty close.
Yeah, it's not a direct. It's an A or not an alliteration, but yeah, a similar doer. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I had never, and I say this having taken German for 2 years in college. I had never run across the word Mocker in my 2D years, because that's what I got both years, and German was D's. So, okay. So that's why I stuck with English, and all my podcasts are in English, or close to English anyways. You know.
I'm going to show my ignorance and ask a question.
Well, it's not ignorance.
How come Batman knows who Wonder Woman Diana Prince is, but Diana Prince Wonder Woman doesn't know who Batman?
Well, it's there's off the top of my head, I would say because a little bit before this, right after she hit her mod swearing off Amazon and all that, she went to the JLA and officially quit because she didn't have any powers left. Yeah. Now, I didn't include it in our lineup because that was like 2 pages of the 30 pages of the story, and I didn't think it was enough to talk about Wonder Woman. Now, she quit as Diana Prince. This is how she looked. So maybe it's so soon. Batman was in attendance when she quit, and he
remembers
that.
Well, he does say that she only knows me as Batman back when she was in the JLA.
So,
but it was like, I would have thought that the members of the JLA knew the other persona of the hero.
What wasn't one of the things about the JLA, Billy, is that they left it up to the individual members whether they wanted to take the mask off or not?
Yeah, I think early on they were just like, hey, if you want it, that's great. If not, don't. And then at some point, I know Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, a bunch of like maybe the original big ones, they kind of knew each other's identities. Or if you don't, you read a Bob Haney comic, everybody knows everybody's secret identity.
Yeah, that's – yeah, we all know everybody according to – in Bob Haney's world. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like how Bruce also says, besides, we Americans have to stick together in strange lands. I'm thinking, okay, Bruce, this isn't World War II, buddy.
Yeah, calm really. Down. It's like, ooh, being kind of xenophobic there, Bruce. That's, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then she's very, very pretty. I'm like, oh, man, I don't know who's worse. Here are these German creeps.
Yeah. Yeah, really.
Jeez.
So, yeah, we see Bruce in his a banana yellow, I guess, Wayne 1 is what the little logo is supposed to be. It's a W1 on the jumpsuit. As he's,
that's the name of his car.
W1?
Wayne 1.
Oh, Wayne 1. Okay, and it matches. Okay. See, that's why I keep you around.
I know.
I just read, and none of this stuff sinks in. It just bounces right off like water off a waxed car or something. Nothing really, just to me. Well, just mainly continuing the story here, but the very last panel on the page 5 here, that dude looks particularly sinister.
Yes.
And he's going to turn out to be the bad guy. Yes. It's not really, you can't really tell too much yet. But yeah, that tells you that. Watch him.
Yes.
Peace. All right. Let's see. Moving on. So we're at a race. It's a real race. It's not like something for charity or anything like that. So we're having time trials. The Widowmaker goes out for its time trial. The Wayne One goes out for its time trial and does better. And so the car driven by this mysterious Mr. Wayne, I don't think anybody really has associated him with like Gotham City's rich dude, Bruce Wayne, have they?
No. Yes, they have.
Have they already made that connection? Oh, okay. Okay. So, but you see this driver here. What was his name? Von Dort.
Von Dort.
And he's, you know, and his crew here on the next page, and they're all, you can see they're all of the same mind that, in order to win, we're going to have to do something with this Bruce Wayne. Speaking of winning, what's been going on with the Van Dorts hasn't really come up yet.
No.
But there's something sinister about their winning ways, and that's kind of the whole reason that Bruce Wayne turns out to be there, because he's kind of there as Batman, but he's also there doing his Playboy thing, which I always thought they did pretty well in the movies.
Mm-hmm.
The Playboy Wayne was really an annoying pain in the butt. And I think you'd have to be that way to completely separate you from anything resembling Batman so that nobody ever made that connection.
Mm-hmm.
How about you, Billy? Anything standing out yet?
So, yeah, on page 7 there, when the Van Dort and his crew are plotting, so mm-hmm. Was I reading this correctly? All of them are wearing the same, jumpsuits with the number 7 on the back, because up until this point, he's killed 7 other people.
Right. I guess that's why it's 7. Yeah.
I mean, no investigation by like the Racing Federation here or the police even. Hello.
Well, I guess it's just, you know, an unfortunate incident. Every single time he wins, it's just, you know, it's just coincidental.
Can't prove anything.
And yeah. Then is he doing like sign language here to communicate? Because I don't know what's going on there either.
That's what he is supposed to be, but it's.
Well, there's a couple of letters here that I recognize, but in the first panel, I don't recognize what he's trying to do there. Now the second panel, the two letters there, those are letters. It's B and I.
I, yeah.
But I'm not exactly sure why he's doing sign language, unless he has someone there who's deaf, which they haven't said, or they just finds that as a way that nobody usually can understand what they're talking about.
That's what I would think. In any books that I have read that came out before this, I don't know that I've ever really seen sign language mentioned. This is about the first place I think I've ever seen it mentioned.
And I'm kind of offended by it being called finger talking.
That's weird.
Yeah,
they couldn't use the word sign language. Is that like
they're finger
trademarked
talking.
And
yeah.
You can't say it in a book or something?
Oh, unfortunately, it was Diana, because if the little Oriental blind guy had called it finger talking, that would have been like, wow.
True, but he also knows German because he's the one interpreting the finger talking.
Right. Just by the letters. Mm-hmm. Okay. I wasn't aware that Ching knew, you want to call it American Sign Language, but we don't know that that's what it is. It's just sign language.
Well, he doesn't know the sign language. She's telling him
him the letters.
He knows German.
Okay.
That's even more surprising.
He's putting the letters together. So he can read German.
Yes.
And he's putting the letters together and telling her what they... Yeah. Okay. So, and also, Billy, in that panel that you mentioned there, somehow their uniforms turned a different color.
They're green now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They're instead of blue, like a dark blue, navy blue, they're green. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. a definite green there. Well, but his is still blue.
But his hands up here are flesh colored, and down here they're green. The colorist was a little
shadows. Yes. There's a lot of shadows. I guess that would explain why the uniforms change color, why the hands. But it doesn't. Shadows don't explain why the chick dancing up here was blue.
No.
The shadows don't do that. So. Yeah.
No.
Okay, so moving on, we see that the Mocker crew is trying to ensure that Bruce Wayne loses, since he has proven to be the better driver. We start seeing a little bit of action here finally. What is this? 2, 4, 6, 7, 8 pages, 8 and 9 pages into the story. Finally, more than just some talking heads and whatnot. A little bit of fighty fight and a little bit of Diana Prince, not with Wonder Woman powers, but with Ching taught Kung Fu, I guess, powers is what she does. And even Ching gets into the action here a little bit. What do you think there, Billy?
Yeah, it's interesting. So Bruce is doing just fine on his own, obviously. But once he sees Diana is coming, because I guess he actually hears her. She says, "Hold on, Bruce, we're coming." And he thinks to himself, "Oh, no, it's Diana. Can't have her seeing me doing any of my Batman stuff." Okay, your Batman stuff. That's great.
Yeah, punching people, I guess, in a certain way, or say, you know, yeah.
But to say so Batman stuff is just fighting.
I don't know.
Bruce Wayne's not allowed to fight
because Bruce Wayne's not going to pull out a batarang or stuff like that. Because he's just Bruce Wayne. Yeah,
he can just fight with his hands.
Well, you would think, I guess.
But apparently, he feels that that's too telling.
Well, for maybe
him to fight with his hands. I mean, you can't have a big strapping man like he is not have any physical attributes of fighting.
But maybe that's it. Maybe being the rich billionaire, he's not supposed to be able to fight. And so that would kind of...
Well, then he should be give away 100 pounds soaking wet.
Well, yeah.
Wimpy man.
Yeah. Some pretty good fight scenes here. I think that Sikowski did pretty well with the scenes here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, looks good.
Moving on here, we see the... even back then, getting smacked in the face with a wrench was kind of the end. You couldn't really come back from that, even as Batman, or, well, Bruce Wayne in this case. That kind of finished the fight and allowed the bad guys to get away, which I guess is realistic, even though he didn't want to give away the fact that he was Batman. I would say that even Batman, the cowl is kind of made of something, isn't it, to keep that from happening? Isn't it some kind of hardened substance or something? Yeah.
Could be. I like when he wears a rubber mask over his cowl. That's my favorite thing.
Yes, absolutely. Yep. Moving on. Bruce wakes up in the hospital. Of course, he doesn't know what happened.
In
the hotel room. Yeah, they took him to the hotel and got the hotel's doctor, probably. Mm-hmm. Seems back then every hotel had, every fancy hotel had extra people like this, kind of like the doctor on the Love Boat. Mm-hmm. Doctor, slipped my mind. Mm-hmm. Phillips? No. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I don't remember. Okay.
I can't remember the doctor. I like the bartender. Isaac was my favorite.
Yeah. Who was the bartender.
Yeah.
And then
Julie was the cruise.
Well, you say that our buddy Kurt on Twitter was fortunate enough to marry Julie, the cruise director. His wife's name is Julie, but he refers to her as
Julie the cruise director.
JCD. Okay. Julie the cruise director is how he it doesn't he Billy.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So I assume her name is Julie, and okay. Yeah. So, some flippy floppy kind of stuff here. Bruce wanting to do the Batman stuff, but then having to worry that. Diana and Ching are here. I think Ching knows, and he's just not saying anything. Diana finally leaves to go take care of some stuff. And
she's going to take his place in the race.
Right.
She's going to the race.
And so while she's gone doing that, Bruce becomes Batman. Spoilers for those of you out there that don't know, Bruce Wayne is Batman. So it's, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I tell you what, I actually think I would have liked this story better if Diana would have gotten to race and Bruce would have, and aka Batman here. Spoiler alert. Would have been the guy that had to kind of do some other stuff. I think I would have liked to see her race against this guy.
True. Yeah, that would have been more interesting if Batman had stayed like the detective-y side of things and approached from that and let Diana be the eyes and ears in the race to either take everybody's attention towards her or to try to figure out whatever she could by actually being in the race while he was off gallivanting as Batman, swinging around on bat ropes and what have you. Mm-hmm. So, here we see a little bit of the backstory about Van Dort's dad, and why I was hoping that this was actually going to be a story, because I was going to see if I could look it up and find it and read it just to see what Batman did as far as this Nazi general. But it was just thrown in apparently to this story. Does it strike any chords of memory with you fighting a General Van Dort, Billy?
No, but I will say this, and Haney gets a lot of crap for this, and he should, how, you know, sometimes he'll have Batman fighting alongside Sergeant Rock in World War II, and then it's the 1970s, and him and Rock are still around kicking butt. It's just like, so they're 60 or 70 years old by now? I don't know about that.
Yeah. Well, it's and that's kind of what made Haney famous or infamous.
Yeah, loved and is
that. Yeah, that very thing. He's like, what's continuity? They can fight. They're both in DC. It's like, yeah, but they're like five generations apart or something like that. Yeah. So
he's pretending.
He's pretending wrong. No. Looking at the fandom wiki, the general appeared also in Batman Family issue number 4, but also in Detective Comics 343. So that probably was where he fought, where Batman actually fought him.
And I feel like those should, well, definitely Batman Family is after this. And I feel like the other comic might be as well. I don't know if they have dates there, but.
Yeah, Detective was, this issue of Detective is dated 1965. So it's about three or 4 years before this. Yeah. So
holy crap.
Look at them actually using continuity. Yeah. Wild. I know. Wow. Yeah. So Diana goes in the race, but she's going to race. But then the healed up Bruce Wayne
Batman
is going to race as Batman, too.
He's
so,
not really healed up. He's just Batman.
Well, he's healed up enough to race.
And they're using finger language again.
Yeah, on page 12.
Finger talk. I'm sorry, finger talk.
12. Is that what they call it? Finger talk?
14 on my book.
Yeah. Well, or page 270 of the omnibus. Whichever page you want.
Or 341 in my trade.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, we have all the page numbers. Just pick one. Yeah.
Well, on page, I think it's actual comic page 13 there. I like how Diana, and somebody posted this on Twitter when I posted the other picture where Batman said about, or Bruce said about, I don't want to be doing my Batman stuff. Diana's looking through binoculars at what's going on, and she says, "Ching, listen to what I see." And he's in the background, and just the oddness of listening to what someone sees is just kind of funny.
Yeah, it is. And to both of them, there's no reaction. So it's like, well, yeah, they talk that way to each other all the time. It's just, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then there's the finger talk, as we said again. It's so bizarre. Just call it sign language, man.
Oh, yeah, I don't. And I wonder why Sikowski chose to do this, use sign language in the story. You know, is that one of the main things that he built the story around? Because that's kind of something odd to just insert.
Maybe for some reason he knows or has experience with sign language and wants to call attention to it a little bit. And like, see, even villains can use it. So learn it.
Well, and speaking of. On the next page from what Billy said, so it'd be 14, top row, final panel, the right panel. I don't believe that is sign language that dude is doing.
No.
That, you know, that's some looks kind like, of nanner nanner, you can't get me kind of, or something like that, you know.
That's Three Stooges level stuff there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That, so, but yeah, the previous two panels there, spelling out were letters here, and she's passing it on to Ching. But then this final panel, and it's an image of her looking at Van Dort through the binoculars. So you kind of have the two circles kind of connected together, like somebody sees through a binocular, and he's got his hands crossed under his chin with the fingers extended past his chin on either side. And it's just a
I think he's eventually doing the he's
got
him over here where we see him, but then he's gonna go like the slicing motion.
I don't
across
know.
The neck.
That's I get it. You do
because she says, I know what that last gesture means.
You just do that with one finger.
Not if you're German.
Oh, okay. You use both hands.
Yes.
Okay. Or I guess you use both Hans.
Hans.
Aha. Yeah. So, sorry for all our German listeners. I don't mean that. That was a joke. So okay.
Don't hate it.
Okay. So the race starts. Nice panel here of the starting of the race. All of the camera angle is 45 degrees. All the cars are coming at us. And of course, Batman's cape is flapping out behind him. Yeah. But you see all the cars, you see the smoke and the squelching tires, the smoke from the tires and the dirt from all of the massive starting. And just,
I know in this book, I don't really read the book, but I have to read this. Meanwhile, growling, screaming, snarling like a pack of ravenous hounds, the racers hurtled down the first short straight. I'm sorry. That was very poetic.
You like that? You like that? Okay.
I understood exactly what he was portraying there.
Okay. First car crash, race scene here. What do you see here, Billy?
Well, I do like how Batman's cape is flying through the air and probably blinding a bunch of other drivers. So I think he should be black flagged for that alone.
I think so. Yeah, those immediately behind him, like two or three cars in a row behind him, aren't going to be able to see past that cape. Yeah, so.
Mm-hmm. He's cheating.
And formerly,
it's like when you're in a rainstorm, you're just following the lights of the car in front of you.
Well, fortunately, this isn't a who is it that really went wild on the cape? Jim Steranko?
No, I'm trying to think. Maybe Starlin. Yeah,
somebody in the like 80s had that big, massive, almost had to gather it up and carry it like Doctor Who's scarf from Tom Baker kind of length and stuff.
Yeah, I can't remember who that was either. Now I'm trying to think about it. But yeah, there have been some artists that like really took some liberties with the cape and then even made like the cowl, the ear parts on it be like 2 feet high.
Right. Yeah. Big, tall, pointy thing. Yeah. So fortunately, this was a short cape and cowl era. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I do like the technique of the Van Dort Stooge here, having the firearm disguised in the camera, and he's standing on a bluff so that as a photographer, he can take pictures of the race as it goes by, with Batman being his target, and he's going to shoot, and this is all a camouflage setup here. I thought that was kind of cool.
But Diana gets to thwart him. She thwarts them all. She's so good.
Next page we see, was that something off of the cover with that wheel thing? Or no, that was off of the first story page. Yeah, we did sort of see it here on the cover. Mm-hmm, here it's wheel. Yeah, it looks like a star hubcap kind of extending, crashing Batman's car. But here we see it's a piece of metal that they use that extends out, and they're trying to catch the opposing car's tire on it and mm-hmm. rupture the tire at what they're probably screaming along at like 30 miles an hour.
No, they're probably 40, doing 180. Yeah.
Oh, okay. And so that's, I guess we're kind of learning too, that this is how they have won the other seven races, is by this, at least, this one technique, but we see other techniques as the story goes on, because this technique doesn't work. Batman is wise to this and thwarts it and gets away.
Well, you would think with seven other deaths that they would have more people.
I don't know. Yeah.
You know, positioned along the way, because they have this dude here because there's never anybody here from the Racing Commission. It's like they should have people.
Well, do you watch Modern Racing at all, Billy?
I do not know.
I watch it on occasion just out of curiosity. It's not something I particularly enjoy or search out. But nowadays, something like this would be virtually impossible mm-hmm. because of television and now drone mm-hmm. cover it, you know. So I wonder if in the late 60s was visual coverage so poor that they could honestly get away with these kind of shenanigans. I mean,
this is a
the next one. Well, yeah, the next one is the old well, I guess I saw this in Speed Racer for mm-hmm. the first time. The releasing of the oil when you're in front of someone to cause them to lose traction and spin out of control and whatnot. So that is something that seems to me that could be more possible with multiple cars and motors and engine problem, whatever, you know. But yeah, this sharp pointy stick that you did. Yeah, no, I was gonna do a Monty Python, rabbit joke, but there was there was no way to put it in there. Yeah, sorry. To take out the tire. That I mean, that I would think that people would see that. I don't care where you do that. That's whereas the oil could be something that just they just lose control and crash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's actually possible. You know, all the cars that could be leaking.
That's what I would think. I would think that this something coming out of your tire is kind of forcing it when this oil is something that is more naturally occurring anyway. So why do something that would make you stand out rather than this that could just occur on its own anyways? Meh. So what do we have? We have a hay bale here that's going to be used as a weapon, but Diana thwarts that. Here is your it's not Mountain Dewy. It's kind of green. Here's your green face plate, both Batman over his cowl and then the Van Dort driver here.
Mm-hmm. It almost looks like Batman's helmet actually has little pointy spots for his cowl to fit right into his ears.
It does. He is wearing more like a batter's helmet, I think.
Yeah.
that looks like a bat. You could almost see this as like the Little League, you know, where they always have to have a grill on the helmet nowadays. That's kind of
they make them wear it. Yeah.
Yep. Or who else? Girls softball, I think, in college.
All they have like a cage now. Yeah.
Yeah. All of them have to have a grill of some sort on there too. Yeah. So, I don't think I've seen that though in the men's college baseball ranks. I see it every now and then, but I don't think it's mandatory like it must be with the women's softball.
Yeah. Different rules, I guess.
Yeah. I'm not sure if that's right.
That's weird.
Yeah, you can be smashed in the face at 100 miles an hour by a baseball. That's okay. But you, young lady, can't be hit 75 miles an hour by a big softball.
It should be optional.
Yeah.
And it probably is. It's just the men have this ego thing and they don't want to wear it.
Well,
I'm a big tough man.
It obscures your sight. Yeah. You need every advantage to see 100 mile an hour fastball.
Now that I'm thinking about it, they should make the guys wear it. There's enough ugly guys as it is. We don't need any more with smashed up faces and stuff like that.
Right. True. Yeah. We don't need to increase the numbers there.
No.
And I would be behind protecting how our young up and coming females look. I think that would be a worthy cause. We need to help protect them if they want it now, not trying to force a grill on you. Okay, so we're zooming in the race here and
going to tunnel.
Well, Van Nort has a flash, a strobe light on his car. He manages to get in front of Batman and they go into this tunnel and he strobes Batman. So Batman loses his day vision, which I guess just shows he should be doing this at night. Yeah, never mind.
Okay.
And so now Batman is... He's driving blind, but he's using a
telescopic elongating stick.
Yeah, just a telescoping rod
from his utility.
And he's scraping the wall of the tunnel they're going through because he's blind, and that way he knows how far away he is from the tunnel and doesn't rub up against the side of it and mess up his tires.
I'm not trying that.
I don't think it works.
We're not going down the road. I don't think it works that way. Down 460 here in 77 and getting in a tunnel and trying that.
No. Well, and the cool thing about where we live is within about 20 minutes, we have two tunnels we can try it on.
No.
If it doesn't work on the first one, we can try it on the next one.
No.
Something new on the next one. So, okay.
Or here's a better idea. Isn't that one really huge ass bridge near you guys? Just try it there.
Oh, okay, but I'm not sure if you would hit anything on the bridge.
I was thinking you get too close to the edge on that thing. I'd rather be.
Definitely don't want to. Yeah, that's the New River Gorge Bridge. Yes.
Yes. Oh dear God. Yeah, I want to visit there. Got to visit there. I see pictures of it. It just blows me away. I'm like, I got to get there.
Oh, you've never been there at all?
No, I have not.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. And one of the cool things about it is the visitor center has. A trail that as soon as you leave the visitor center, you get to a clearing and you get a really cool view of the bridge because they built the visitor center that close to it on one side of the gorge. So
cool.
That's cool. You go down and there's you come out and go down, and the first platform that you come to is big enough, and it's cleared, and it gives you a really kind of a angled view of the entire length of the bridge. You can see where it's comes to ground here almost right next to you, and you can see the entire span to the other side because of the angle that you're at, and it's cool.
And if you want to pay a little money, you can walk the underside.
Underneath, yeah. Did you know that, Billy?
Oh yeah, I'm definitely gonna do that. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah, sure. Yeah. You can.
I'll probably be alone because everybody else is a wuss. But my family and I go there. But yeah, oh yeah, yeah. We went to I can't remember what the name of it is, but there's a bridge that got ripped apart by a tornado years ago, and it got like ripped in half. But they still have like half of it that you could walk out on, and one part of the is even glass where you can see straight down. And everybody was like, "Eh," and my family, I'm like, "You sissies!" And I was out there, I'm like, "Yeah, this is cool." Yeah.
Now this is all steel. Now I think where you walk, you can look through it, but it's like a steel grid, mm-hmm. and you strap in. They attach you to the bridge. So if you fall, you're not going anywhere.
Yeah. Oh, Diana. Now I can't wait to hear what you guys think about this next part. I felt like Sikowski was doing good with Diana here, and then all of a sudden she gets a flat tire, and she just kind of. I feel like he kind of did a little bit of a disservice to her here. What do you guys think?
I agree.
I don't know. I mean, I guess the point was to put her in a position where she could be captured, which isn't necessarily bad, mm-hmm. you know, being that this is, first of all, this is Batman's book. Now, we have to remember, we're reading it for Wonder Woman. But this is a Batman vehicle, so he's got to take the upper hand somehow. But this is kind of a weak sauce way, I think, to put her into the hands of the bad guys.
Is yes. This,
it's kind of powder puffy and, kind, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
And if they were going to have the tied down scene, this is where it should be.
Yeah.
She should mm-hmm. be staked to the ground.
Yeah, right here somewhere.
Yeah, right here.
Yeah, and then poor Ching, he's got a gun to his head. I'm like, man, poor dude.
And he's not showing anything. No emotion from the dude.
No, like it doesn't even bother him at all.
Nope, he's hardcore. Also, I want to note at the top of page 21, story page 21, mm-hmm. that is a beautiful face he has put on Diana.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Sikowski's done good by her through this whole book.
I really love it. Yeah, yeah, for the most part, he's maintained, I think, nice feminine lines, even though I would think that giving up her Amazonian powers, she probably still has an Amazonian physique. Right. I would think she would still have muscles and be kind of cut and maybe not big. Maybe that's the power. But I mean, she would still have to be in some kind of good shape, you know, like some of the women that wrestle in AEW. They're mm-hmm. just they're not wrestlers. They're just athletic. Mm-hmm. A cheerleader. Mm-hmm. Yeah. OK. Sorry. Yeah. So, yeah, like Billy said, Diana, she ends up getting captured here. Kind of a weak sauce story element rather than something perhaps that we would wholeheartedly believe. Also, look at this tool that this henchman is going to use to cut this final cable that's holding the banner.
Mm-hmm. What the hell is that?
I
don't know.
If that's supposed to be pliers, I have never seen or wire cutters. I've never seen them like that. Unless it's some kind of heavy duty pair or something, but that's, yeah.
Well, that's a pretty big cable, so he'd have to have something pretty strong.
I figured it was rope, to be honest with you. Oh, I didn't figure in the 1960s that they would put that banner up with an actual steel cable.
Okay.
I mean, I guess they could. Well,
he does call it a wire.
Well, okay.
On page 20 there at the bottom when he's reaching up with that crazy device. I feel like that's a thick, like he needs like a blowtorch to get through that thing.
Well, like, yeah, over here, yeah, it's yeah.
Jeez.
Okay, so yeah, and he finally does cut it, and what happens is he has taken Diana hostage to keep her out of the way, and he's getting ready to cut a banner that they've strung up across the racetrack, supposed to be set up so that Van Dort comes through the tunnel that they came through a little earlier with the strobe light behind Batman, which. I believe that's what he said. Batman first and then Van Dort drop the banner on Batman and Van Dort drive past.
Yes.
But if all of that is happening in front of him, I don't see how he would drive past. Now, he could
because he knows that it's going to happen in front of him and he'll be far enough back to where he can let it happen and then he'll drive around.
He would be in front and be able to look in whatever mirror he has and see that Batman has cracked up because the thing fell, is, I think, would be so, which, yeah. Ultimately,
it doesn't work because Van Dort has his male ego all fired up, and he says that his henchmen have failed him throughout this whole day, so he's just going to win the race all by himself.
Right. So he tries to physically crash Batman's car, and so
and be in front.
Van Dort gets in front. Mm-hmm. The banner's cut falls on his car, causes him to crack up, and Batman wins the race.
Diana pimp slaps the guy.
Yeah, I'm surprised there wasn't a hi-ya anywhere here in this panel when she did that. You know, you would think here's Ching, here's Diana, she's doing some kung fu. Well, yeah, that's ripe for a hi-ya to knock him out, but that's not what she did. Didn't say anything, actually. And then here at the very end, where does it come up? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. The final six panels in the story is the final three lines of the synopsis, where come to find out a car that Diana's been using was not a rental. She took the wrong car, or the paperwork got fouled up, or whatever happened. And she actually ended up driving a car without permission, in essence, driving a stolen car. But that we know that's not what happened. And she gets carted off by the...
How do the keys fit? You know what I mean? I don't know.
This may be the weakest element to the whole story. It didn't, you know.
And it's not necessary. I don't understand why he even threw it in there.
Nah.
It's not necessary.
Humor, I guess. Okay. You know. Oh, look, Diana got arrested. Ha, 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 ha. You know. Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, is this during the Batman TV show era?
69, 70, yeah.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Or just over, maybe, but then maybe they were trying to make it kind of like mirror that a little bit. But yeah. I love how Batman, look at him in that last panel, as if he's like, I don't know if he's got on stilts or he's like just hulking over all these little German people, apparently.
Right, he is much, much larger in stature, yeah, for sure. Even Diana, he's pretty much a head taller than Diana.
Mm-hmm. And he asks her out with Bruce, you know, as his proxy here.
Right. Yeah. As she's being carted off by the police.
It's fantastic.
it was supposed to be funny, and it's funny in a wah, wah kind of way rather than a ha ha kind of way.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
All right. Now let's get to a cool part of our discussion of the book here. And let's look at the other things that were in this issue besides the story.
I want what's on the inside cover. I want the free Giant Stallion mural, full color masterpiece, and the other four prints for a buck. I want them all.
All right. Billy, did you say you were able to get a hold of something to see the ads in this?
Billy,
are you still there? Did we lose you?
Whoop, sorry. I was on mute. Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yep. I'm able to see them. Yep.
Okay, cool.
They look great, by the way. That horse ad's awesome.
Yes.
I love the names. Aristocracy Lady.
Yeah.
Pride of Duchess.
Pride of Duchess. Lady Gallant. Yeah.
That's great.
Well, those things will sell the prints by themselves, yes. Much less with the prints. So, I mean, yeah. And and what have we got here? We've got four of them.
Plus that free big one up at the top.
For
a buck.
Dollar and a quarter. And what are they? They're all 9x12.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That's not bad.
The big one, 16x20.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Yeah. This is better than a lot of artist portfolios that they'll start coming out with for comic artists. Yeah, that's nice. Mm-hmm. All right.
Our next ad is a Revell ad, Builder Yourself, Model of the Month for October, the USS Enterprise.
Mm-hmm. Not that Enterprise, the other Enterprise.
Yeah, the nuclear aircraft carrier.
Right, yeah.
Not the space traveling model, but it has a 4.5-acre flight deck and 200,000 plus horsepower. That's a pretty big little ship.
Well, this sounds like the thing that the yard sale boys are always talking about with their G.I. Joes. Mm-hmm. Do you listen to their G.I. Joe shows, Billy?
Oh, the Longbox Crusade guys?
Yeah, the USS Flag, how they're always... Yep. Lamenting having it or not having it or wanting it and all of this other stuff. That's that's instantly whenever I see an aircraft carrier anyways, that's always what I think of. I forget who it is, But one of the brothers, I think, had it and the other didn't. And it seemed to cause some amount of consternation.
Some strife.
Yeah, you know.
I like how it also says the ship, she's home to 5,000 men. And yeah, 5,000 dudes on a ship. I'm telling you right now, if I was a woman, when I saw that thing coming to port, I'd run.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Yeah.
5,000 dudes on a boat for like weeks on it by themselves. Get me out of here.
Well, now, unless you were of a mind to make money in certain ways, and then, of course, the bank just rolled in. So
that's true. Yeah.
You know, yeah. Oof, but yikes. But there were probably very few of those people there when the ship came to shore. So, yeah.
Mm, yeah.
What we got
now? Our next ad is a full page Hot Wheels Grand Prix ad where it's telling you, see if you can get dad to race you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's a very appropriate ad for this comic.
What is this? A Chaparral?
Mm-hmm.
A Chaparral
and a McLaren.
McLaren. Now, the McLaren name I recognize from racing,
mm-hmm.
Open wheel in particular. The Chaparral I recognize from Westerns, right? Mm-hmm. High Chaparral.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know that car.
Yeah, McLaren I know. The other one, nope. Yep.
Then our next ad is a half page calling members of the Mighty Eye Patrol talking about the Iverson bike, their own little comic that they have. And then the bottom half of that page is, you've met Superman's parents, you've met his friends, now meet Superman's secret family in a giant collection on sale October 7th.
Is that a comic book or is it prints or?
It's Giant Superman. It's a comic book, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a giant one. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay, number 222. Okay, yeah, it's a book where, okay. But it's not Superman family. It's just the Superman title.
No, yeah, this is one of those where I think it was like an imaginary story where he had a secret family and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, okay.
I'd never seen that Iverson ad before in my life, by the way. I was like, wait, what?
Really?
Iverson? Yeah, I've never seen that one.
It's in every Wonder Woman book.
Yeah, I think we've seen Iverson bikes in Wonder Woman, yeah.
Okay, cool.
I mean, that for this time period, if I were grade school to middle school age, that is a tricked out bike that I'm going to want. That rocks.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, our next ad is a half page. Tomorrow's Teenagers are back with Marvin the Midget. You must read it to believe it. Tomorrow's Teenagers, Sugar and Spike.
Oh, boy. Yeah. I've heard the Checkered Past podcast guys talk about Sugar and Spike, and it's pretty crazy. I've never read one. Have you guys?
No.
I haven't read this version, but I did read the version that they put out when they did all of the who are they? Warner Brother? No, all of the cartoon characters were teaming up with actual DC characters, and they had books coming out.
Oh yeah, I remember that. Yep.
Yeah, they had a Sugar and Spike, and they were private detectives, I believe, and they were both, you know, I don't know, early 20s or something like that, and so they. I think it was about that same time that they put out an issue of Sugar and Spike in that format. So that I read, and it was done pretty well. But these ha-ha books from the 60s and 70s, no, I haven't read any Sugar and Spike there.
Yeah, never either.
Now, this next page I want to make a comment about. This actually warrants its own entry in the Grand Comics database for this issue. Because, did I close it already? Oh, here we go. Okay, because the artist for these headshots, it's a series of headshots, for those of you that don't have the book, along the left-hand side of the mm-hmm. page, by artists like Marv Wolfman, Russ Heath, Joe Kubert, and Irv Novick
mm-hmm.
drawing those. And they're a kind of iconic characters for these creators, either having written them or drawn them or both, and that mm-hmm. that's what they're doing here. It's a text piece entitled "The Greatest Hero of Them All," and it's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of these headshots. And I mean, I recognize the names of the characters, but I didn't necessarily realize from these little headshots who the artists were that these were taken from, who had either contributed to them or, you know, where these headshots came from. And when I saw those names, I was like, wow, that at this time, at the very least, that would have been a pretty major roll call of creators, much less now as we're sitting reading, being able to see one page that has examples of art from all of those creators. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really cool. And I mean, I think the reason they specifically called those out is because when Brave and the Bold, that title first got started, it had a lot of these characters in it before it became a Batman team up title.
Oh, okay. So they were just trying just different stories each issue.
Yeah, there were some with Robin Hood, some with the Silent Knight. Like, it was more of an anthology kind of book. I mean, eventually even the JLA started in that book, and I'm trying to think of who else. Hawkman even had a short stint in it. But yeah, the very early issues of Brave and the Bold had Robin Hood, Silent Knight, all these characters, which are Viking prince too. Joe Kubert is fantastic.
Yeah, I was going to say, so if these are characters from the early parts of this book, that means that these creators drew these characters in the early part of this book, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, for sure. I know Joe Kubert. He was the Viking Prince artist. Yeah, he did. Oh, those are fantastic. I actually bought a trade. It was a little, I think it was out of print, but I was, or just about out of print, and I was able to get a hardcover of Joe Kubert's Viking Prince stuff. And oh, it's just phenomenal.
Cool. Okay, cool. So there you go, babe. There's some history.
Thank you.
Not you, babe, Billy, but my wife here. So.
Okay. Oh, man.
Sorry. You have a babe too, though. I mean, you have one. I have one. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, we're good. Mm-hmm.
The next up, let's get away from this weirdness, is a two-page spread.
Wow.
Of I'm going to have to listen more often when you all do podcasts, I must say. What kind of Tyco action do you prefer? And it is a, like I said, a two-page spread. It's got the train, the more detailed, skilled building over here. Or you can have your race cars with fast action, because they're not remote controlled. They are wired up, but still they run. After you build them, they run. So you can decide which one you want to do, which one's yours. And you can get a color catalog for just a quarter. Make your decision. Order it.
Give me the train.
I would take the train too.
Yeah, I think I'd take the train too. Although, in our little town here, Billy, we've got a, I guess you would almost call it a hobby shop. And they have, since they opened, they have been selling different remote control-y kind of things, different styles and sizes of cars, and the same with trains. But as they have stayed open, they have been expanding to where now they have a, like, if you go from the street into the store, they have like three or four sections as you go from the front to the back. And I mean, they're big sections, but the final back section, they've laid out on the floor an oval track that you can use to race cars of a particular size. In the room before that, they've got train tracks set up so that you can test out trains.
Wow.
In the room before that, which would be the second room off of the street side. Now, the street side room is where most of the retail stuff is. Oh, cool. So the next one is always the one that I go to, because in one half of the room, they have a whole bunch of fake terrain set up, and they have timed. It's races, but you don't race against each other. You try to complete an obstacle course with a remote controlled vehicle, and whoever does it the fastest is who wins that heat, and you know, they go back and forth competing like that. But it's like the terrain is probably anywhere from 7 to 10 feet tall.
Wow.
And you're trying to crawl the vehicles over things that are at I don't know, probably 100, 110, 120 degrees to 180 degrees being straight up and down. I mean, it's wow. It's like they have taken some kind of vehicular mountain climbing track from the real world and miniaturized it some and just stuck it in that room, and they have races in there.
That's wild.
Yeah, it's I didn't know that was done until I saw them building it. And you know, the owner will test it out to see if it's difficult enough and stuff like that. And I was fascinated seeing these, because of the incline, it takes certain kind of cars that almost all four wheels articulate by themselves in order to get enough traction to climb it. I mean, it's almost the cars almost look like bug like or something like that to be able to do it. But yeah, it's fascinating to watch.
Oh, cool. Yeah, it's neat.
Hey, our next ad is the Dragon Wagon, the crazy new fun car model by Monogram at your favorite store. I like it. It's a circus car. Mm-hmm. It reminds me of Wacky Racers.
Wacky Racers, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then the bottom half of that ad is Who Done It? Who Is It? Discover the amazing answers in the latest DC hits, Beyond the Unknown and the Justice League of America.
There we go. And Beyond the Unknown is what? Issue 2. So that's early in the run. And then the Justice League title looks like issue 77 they're advertising here.
Mm-hmm. The guy's pulling off a rubber mask, by the way. I love it.
Do you know who that is?
I do not.
Okay. Yeah. I've never read that. I don't know if that's like, is that like one of the heroes that is wearing the mask or?
Yeah, not sure.
Yeah.
Could be.
No Wonder Woman in the lineup, by the way, which I guess there shouldn't be because Wonder Woman's gone right now. So mm-hmm. A little bit of continuity there.
So the next ad is my favorite ad. It's a full page about the exciting ant farm, an ant's entire world complete with stock of live ants coming to you for $298. Mm-hmm. An extra special, you can get the giant ant farm for $695.
And it's a full page ad turned 90 degrees mm-hmm. on the page.
Let me figure $698. That was a lot of scratch back then.
That is
the giant ant.
But that's a lot of money, man. $7 for something for my kids like that. Yeah,
that's a Christmas combo birthday present.
For sure.
for multiple of the children.
Yes. For both. For everybody.
Yes.
Family gift. Yeah.
Yeah.
Then our next ad is a third page new king size matchbox model of the month. The tough job. Calls for the king size matchbox. It's the Scammel mobile crane number K12 that sells for $2.25. We had a lot of matchbox growing up when I was a kid because I have brothers.
It's a pretty big model for 2.25.
Yeah. There's some value in those matchbox.
Giant size, king size.
And then here in the actual comic, we have a one page.
Yes.
Is it a one?
It's one page.
It's a one page story entitled A Matter of Life and Death, which has no superheroes or anything. It's more like something that you would see out of one of DC's mystery comics or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, it was. I was like, what is that there for?
Yeah, I guess. Page. Well, I guess they couldn't quite sell enough ads to do it. So they had to get one more story page in there.
Then we have the letter page where we have people write in about Brave and the Bold. And then our inside back cover is our lovely hodgepodge of different things that you can order. The seahorses for Ed.
Seahorses,
only
yes.
$2.98 for all of those fascinating pets. You can also get a skinhead wig, which Ed has the top part of his on.
Yes, I don't need to buy one.
No. Yeah.
Me neither.
You can learn karate, judo, boxing. I think
Savat.
This is Diana Prince learned. Savat.
Yeah, so Diana that's who's the Savat dude? Captain America's.
Batroc the Leaper.
Yeah, Batroc. Batroc's the Leaper. Yeah.
Your X-ray specs, your monster-sized monsters, your glow-in-the-dark skeleton, your secret book safe. You can order the catalog or you can order them. There's a little bitty lines that you need to write on. I don't know
how you would do that. To fill out the order, yeah.
They'll fill out the order.
And this is in Lynbrook, New York, the Honor House Production Corporation, which makes me want to go to Lynbrook and see if there's anything like that there. I don't know.
It could be a whole warehouse full of this stuff.
Yeah, really.
Then our very back page is the professional card racing model motoring by Aurora. Everything else is kid stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Color.
Yeah, I love that ad.
I do too. It's very kinetic.
So many of the things here, I guess because DC was based in New York, a lot of these companies are based in New York too.
Yeah, a lot of regional stuff. New York, New Jersey, Connecticut for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, back then it was hard to sell advertising outside of your area.
Well, but these comic books went everywhere.
I know, but still, it's hard to sell advertising outside of your area.
And this is coming from paper experience.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I mean, I don't disbelieve you. Okay. Well, that's it for this issue of Brave and Brave and the Bold. And so, Billy, any final thoughts on the book, sir?
Yeah, it was fun. I definitely liked the story. It was a lot of fun. And I do think Sikowski, he did a great job with Diana all the way throughout the book. I thought she looked the best, even better than Bruce Wayne and Batman, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I can go along with that. There's a part of me that really likes seeing the white jumpsuit Diana. I just like that outfit on her. I think the long black hair that she has kind of helps set that off. But I really do like that look for her right now.
Mm-hmm. Super cool. Super cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. I really enjoyed the story. I thought it was very action-packed.
Getting away. Now, do you think that the Brave and the Bold, do you think they handled Diana Prince any better or not as good as in her book?
She wasn't quite as girly in The Brave and the Bold as they are portraying her in her own book.
Okay.
But then I guess they're trying to show that she's a totally different person, and that's why she's so girly in her own book. They're trying to show her as weak and feminine and human. And
That I think is a specific thing that they're attempting to do with the character in her own
book. She wasn't as weak and wimpy in this book.
They didn't quite go that far, these creators, as they have in her own book. So, all right. Well, Billy, I think maybe you have a podcast or two maybe you want to mention, or if people want to hunt you down and complain about you not being on the show enough, where can they find you to level those complaints?
Well, you can find me creeping around on Twitter. I'm not calling it X. That's just weird, man. It's just Twitter is a much better name. I'm on there always, hanging out, having a good time, trying to stay positive. You know, you're one of those people that I always kind of drag into conversation about comics and movies and stuff, Ed. And trying to be shining lights amongst some shenanigans sometimes. But yeah, you can find me on there. It's at @BillyD_licious. So, that's where you can find me. And yeah, podcasting, you know, specifically The Brave and the Bob. It's Brave and the Bold and Bob Haney stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. For those of you who are interested in keeping up with Terry and I, you can find us at Teal Productions, which is on Twitter. Teal Productions is on Blue Sky, and it's also on Facebook. For Terry specifically, which is fine, exclude me. I'm not going to be hurt. She is Tooth Gnasher, like one of Thor's goats on Twitter, or if you didn't know that, for those of you that didn't know that, that's the name of one of his twin goats that he uses instead of horses to pull his carriage around. I am IamIndieMan@gmail.com is the email address if you want to do that. ComicBookNoise.com/TNC, that's just the letters, Tango November Charlie, if you want to go to the website. And so I think from all of us, Terry and I, definitely we would like to thank Billy for helping us talk about the mod era Wonder Woman's appearance, her first appearance in The Brave and the Bold. That was kind of cool. And I think a little bit later on in the series, there's another Brave and the Bold appearance that you may be able to hear from Billy again when we get there. Wonder Woman is in that too, but you'll have to listen along and see. So maybe that's a tease. I don't know. Handle it however you want. Either way, I think we are all done tonight, and we will talk to you guys again next time. Ciao.
Bye.